This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 93, recorded on June 25th, 2018. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we'll be looking inside the numbers of the Cleveland Indians' winning streak. We'll look at Danny Salazar's place on the Indians, when and if he can ever figure it out and get back to healthy and with the team. We'll look at the idea of Adrian Beltre being traded to the Indians. We will look at Jose Ramirez's endless walk streak and a former Let's Go Tribe, or a former Indians player. Jesus Aguilar is having success in Milwaukee. We'll look at how the Indians, what happened there and how they can avoid it again with somebody like, Yandy Diaz. joining me for all that and more, as always, is Let's Go Tribe writer Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Hey!
Nobody has to know that we tried that a first time and you completely forgot we were talking. That could just be a Matt and Merritt secret and whoever was watching live.
Nothing happened. What are you talking about? This is all off the cuff. I didn't plan anything. Who plans A? What am I talking about? Hello, totally Matthew. Plan. It's good to be here.
It's going good. It's a lot better when the Indians are demolishing literally everybody in their sight right now, especially when it's the Tigers. It's so much revenge win. For, what is it? Was that a span of a decade where it was just the Tigers beating up the Indians, and now it's so good.
You know, I really don't think it was as long as we think it was. Was it? I don't know, because there was that period between when the Tigers made the World Series and when the Tigers made the World Series.
You know, where that dark period in my life.
They weren't, like, great. They were always kind of a middle-of-the-pack team. I mean, the Indians were terrible. Don't get it twisted, but it's not like everyone was beating up on the Indians. So I guess the Tigers were doing that. That's true. So never mind. All right.
But they were one of the teams. It wasn't, like, just the Tigers just beating up the Indians. It was
right.
Everybody was beating up the Indians.
That was a thing in once the Indians were good, but in like 2013 and 2014, it still seemed like the Tigers were kind of wailing on them for a while.
Yeah, I think by the time the Indians were really good, like 2016, that's when the Tigers were pretty much done for.
Yeah,
which is kind of unfortunate. I would have liked to see the peak Tigers and peak Indians, what we're seeing now, face each other, but I am okay with watching dilapidated, what's his name, Victor Martinez and Miguel Cabrera, even though he's not playing right now. But just watching those two just struggle against the Indians is so good right now.
Victor Martinez hit a ball on Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember which game it was. But, I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, that's 20 rows up in the bleachers. But it just kind of just went, just kind of fell lazily into Brandon Guyer's glove, maybe? That must have been Sunday then.
Yeah, and then we also, there was at least more than one double play, right, where he was just, I remember one in particular, like, went to Lindor, he just lazily flipped it to second, and it was thrown to first. I don't think Victor was in the screen when it got thrown.
He's just so slow. Just decrepifying before our eyes.
But it's not just the Tigers that the Indians are beating up on, of course. It's also the Royals, another great team, and the White Sox. And one game of the Twins. Yeah. The powerhouses of MLB. Are you one of the people that are thinking it doesn't matter, the Indians are just facing AL Central opponents, or are you in my boat, which is if they were playing bad, everybody'd be yelling at them, so if they're winning, we might as well just celebrate it and kind of be happy about it.
Well, I mean, you don't want to sound cynical, obviously. But yeah, these teams are dreadful. They're all trying to lose in some way or other. You know, as much as whoever talks about it, Tom Hamilton or one of the two guys who does TV for the Indians says about Gardy. You know, yeah, he gets these guys to play very hard, but I mean, you know, you can only play very hard for as long as you can go as far as your talent will take you. So, and not everyone can be in last place in the AL Central. So these teams all stink.
Yeah, and I think the only
teams
team
are doing what they're supposed to do, which is beat the hell out of them.
Yeah. Which again, they're supposed to do, so we should at least be happy about that, right? That they're not getting blown out against them. And the only real team that has a chance, I think, is the Twins, and their manager. Did you see this over the weekend that Paul Molitor, they apparently intentionally threw at a guy because he stole too many bases? That is a real-life thing that happened now.
Lord.
I mean, he said it in the post-game conference. It was something like, we threw at him to see him if he wants to steal another base. I'm like,
yeah, hit him, and then he'll go steal two more bases, you idiots. Jeez.
That's called good managing right there. That's
how if you're going to make the playoffs, you have to win your division. To win your division, you have to beat the hell out of your division opponents. And, I mean, again, none of us really care about the season that much. I'd rather it be a fun season than a depressing season. But everything that matters with this team at this point is October anyway. I don't remember who made the point on Twitter. I feel like it was someone in the Let's Go Tribe universe that all this beating the hell out of the, you know, this gives them a chance to let Andrew Miller rest up and guys who are going to be vital, you know, once the competition becomes fierce, to rest up and be healthy again. They don't need these guys around all the time right now. So as long as it doesn't make them think that the current solutions in the bullpen are real solutions.
Yeah, that's a real danger. Thinking that Neil Ramirez and Oliver Perez are real, they're going to be our October pitchers is kind of a dangerous thought. But
I mean, and again, that's the way it is with arms. You know, I mean, you can't really bet on year to year with the predominance of bullpen arms. But oftentimes, if a bullpen guy has a great first half, he ends up having a great second half, and then he earns a lot of money in the offseason, and the new team hates him. So that's a thing one could hope for, I guess. It's just, and you know, I wrote that these guys do change and get better. I wrote that article late last week, I guess it was, about Perez throwing way more sliders than he ever has. So these are things that they're doing to be better and be less predictable than they were in the past. So that's something.
Yeah, they might have some kind of help coming eventually in the form of Danny Salazar. I don't know if you saw that he was I'm sure you saw it was like last month was the last update that he's kind of he gets like a shot or something and he's fine for like 10 days and then he throws a little bit and then he does long toss and then it starts hurting. It's just like this endless cycle for Salazar. And with the way the Indians starting rotation is pitched lately, I mean, Carlos Carrasco is injured, so he'll come back and probably take Adam Plutko's spot, I would think. But when Salazar comes back, do you dare replace Shane Bieber with him? I mean, I guess you got to see how much more Shane Bieber does because he's a rookie and he's young, but it's going to be really hard. I don't see Mike Clevenger being displaced by Danny Salazar at all. No, obviously, Trevor Bauer, Carrasco, and Kluber aren't. So, I mean, his only shot is maybe beating out Shane Bieber, but coming back after being injured for so long and then just starting in, I mean, at this point, what'll it be like August at the earliest, something like that. So, I don't know. It almost seems like Danny Salazar, his best bet is going to be a reliever. And I don't even like him as a reliever that much.
No. And that's what they've all talked about, too. It's like he's not good at being a reliever because he needs to stretch it. You know, he needs to work himself into things, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, if that's not the case, then yeah, what is his future? You know, yeah, you can go six starters during the season just to rest guys up. But at that point, there's already, like, what? I don't know. Then the bullpen gets really weird too, because everyone forgets Josh Tomlin is still there. That's seven starters the Indians would have on their roster for no good reason. But what do you do with him? He's kind of into the stuff that one would want to be a reliever, but it's because he has the stuff to be a great pitcher. Well, one would hope he could supplant Shane Bieber, obviously. But I like watching him. But Shane Bieber is a good pitcher, and at this point, the service time clock has started. There's no point in sending him back down, really. There's not much more gaming the system you can really do. So if he continues to pitch the way he has, and I mean, there's some guys you see pitch, they're going to be good because they do all the basic things you need to do to be good as a pitcher. He doesn't throw super hard, but he throws a slightly above average fastball. His breaking balls are stupendous on Friday.
Yeah, he commands that thing so well.
I mean, and again, the only issue here, and this is an article I wrote a couple weeks back, was just how good are these pitchers really when they're facing, you know, a bunch of quad A lineups. I mean, these are the same type of hitters predominantly that Bieber was shutting out and no hitting in Triple A or Double A or wherever he was. So he was in Double A, right?
Yeah. No, he was in Triple A.
Was he in Triple A?
Yeah, for a little bit.
But I mean, and again, same thing with Plutko. These are the guys that he threw a no hitter against, you know, so.
But it feels like with Bieber, like those pitches.
I don't know.
If he can do those pitches.
It's the Salazar question. Right? Like he's good. Like he throws good. He throws good is what he does. Right. So that's at the very basic of the entire operation. He is everything you want out of a starting pitcher. I mean, I don't think, unlike someone like, say, Cody Anderson, who performed well, but his peripherals were garbage and he was striking out like you know, 8% of batters or something like that his rookie year. There's way more behind the scenes stuff with Bieber you like. So again, what do you do with Danny Salazar? You can't trade him because he's been injured. I don't know. Maybe the bullpen thing isn't a good idea because then he can start his getting ready to be a bullpen, you know, to come out of the bullpen in the third inning in October or something like that. And then he can be a three-inning guy or something. I don't know.
He just seems so volatile as a reliever. He was enough as a starter, let alone bringing him in a tough situation like the ninth inning or eighth inning. So,
right. But I mean, he'd have to be like a clean, and this is, just me spitballing, I guess. He'd have to be kind of just like a clean inning kind of guy. He comes in no matter what. He doesn't come in the middle of innings. If you have a situation where that's going to happen, you bring in Tyler Olson instead or someone like that. Yeah. And then you just hope he can, like Lincecum was for the Giants for the Giants in 2012, I think it was 12.
Yeah, has it been 14. That long since he's been a good starter? Holy cow.
Well, that he wasn't even a good starter that year. He was bad, and then he came out of the bullpen tons of fire. Like, I remember when they came back down 2-0 to the Reds, like, he came out and he pitched something like 18, or I don't know, a ton of innings out of the bullpen all through that series and through the postseason, and was a vital cog in the whole system because he could just he pitched like an old school fireman, And maybe that's the thing Danny Salazar could be. He comes in and throws three innings at a time when you really need him to. But again, that's a situation where you can't plan for that. I don't know.
Yeah, just kind of happens.
But like we've read about Andrew Miller having to warm up. No, he starts his warm up process in the fourth inning because he's gigantic and made of all sticks. So he needs to really just limber up. I mean, whatever your process might be, you can make it work so it's not only the I am a starter situation, I would think. I don't know.
And to take it back a moment here, Cody Anderson. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah, dude. I think about him. Literally, I think about him all the time. I was a huge Cody Anderson fan. I'm always checking up on information about him. Oh, yeah, huge.
Really?
Are you kidding me? He was the man. He was the sweatiest dude on earth.
He did have a high sweat above replacement. That is.
Not even like yeah, okay, it's a hot day in Cleveland, but like at Tropicana Field.
Yeah, I remember that game specifically. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, why are you so sweaty? just dripping. It's 68 degrees with air conditioning. Or it's a cold day in Oakland. You're just soaked.
Why I do are you remember so, that, yeah.
Jeez. But
Not a great pitcher. Great sweater.
See, and again, I think he has the stuff to be a good pitcher. And I respect the Indians' ability to develop pitchers, and he just seems like a proto Bieber in a sense. Like he doesn't seem to do a lot of great things, but his location was always pretty choice. It's just he wasn't getting a lot of strikeouts because he didn't have a ton of movement a lot of the pitch. But I always loved his curveball too. Yeah, I thought that he could be better than what he had shown us. And just you got Tommy John surgery, and so we're not going to see him until maybe. Probably not even this year, so it's kind of a bummer. But, I'm a huge Cody Anderson fan. Yeah.
Wow. I think he's closer to what I'd want to see as a reliever because you said, like, he has the good curve. He doesn't have a ton of movement, but he has a good enough curve. And what is a fastball, like a 92-mile-an-hour fastball? So it's not exactly searing, but.
I remember he was hitting 95 his second. That was what was so confusing was he way worse the second year, but he was knocking on the mid-90s at times at least, so.
And then he had Tommy John surgery for some random reason. I wonder if those are correlated at all.
Who knows? Tommy John surgery. I was reading somewhere. Maybe it was a comment. It was something. Trevor Bauer thinks that. I think it was something that Kyle Boddy said in a comment somewhere. Was he thinks Trevor Bauer thinks that Tommy John surgery should be considered a PED?
Yeah, I remember. Yep.
It's super true. It's like, I don't know. I can see the rationale, I suppose.
I mean, if you consider that injecting something into yourself is performance enhancing, then maybe taking a ligament from another body part and putting it in your elbow is also a form of enhancement, right? I completely agree with Trevor Bauer on that. That's his true thoughts, which Kyle Boddy's saying it probably me. But then that's a weird line to draw, like. So if we want to get really weird with it, is there any limit to like what you can surgically put in your body? Like if they found a way that like a metal plate would fix something really well, could you just become a cyborg? Is that like a...
Thank God baseball was invented in the 1880s. And the only person who knows this stuff is Jules Verne. Because yes, you can, I bet. Oh no, I got a robot arm. I guess. Oh no! I had my arm removed, had a cannon put on. This seems a little bit much.
I wonder eventually if it'll be like a legit amputee can get a robot arm, and then that opens the door to like anybody can get a robot arm and throw with it. I mean, you can't like get an exoskeleton, can you? Whereas like that's got to be an official rule, I would think.
Well, because that's wearing too much stuff. But then, you know, you look at video of like Barry Bonds in the early to mid-2000s. He was wearing all that armor and stuff. So that's like an exoskeleton.
No, I'm talking like that stuff you wear to lift. Over your whole body.
I'm aware.
I just want to see a home run derby with just that. That's what I want for the All-Star game. The cyborg derby. I want to see Jose Ramirez in one of those. Just like, because that gives you so much power in your legs to hit home runs with that thing.
Yes, no, exactly. And you don't even have to move very much. You just have a little twitch.
Until it gets a little overboard and you just like rip your spine in half. But until then, it's really great.
I mean, guys blow their elbows out all the time. Why can't they just tear themselves literally in two? It's, you know, these are the risks they have to take.
And the best part, you just finish the game. You don't need your spine. You're in your exoskeleton. It'll carry the rest
exactly.
Of the
way. Exactly. I mean, of course, at that point, they were just going to watch robot baseball. Do I want that? I mean, I do want that. Sure. But, you know.
I want to see robot sports eventually. So speaking of needing an exoskeleton,
I think the only reason we want robot sports is for the inevitable robot brawls, though, because we just want robots fighting. I mean,
it's eventually going to be just one pitch is thrown and a brawl every game, just because that's what people want.
And that's why I see circuit boards flying, baby. You know, sparks shooting everywhere. You know, kill, kill, kill. You know, just robots chanting that destroy, lasers, etc. Why did we put lasers in this baseball robot? Who knows? You know.
So speaking of lasers and robots and destruction and blowing up, how about Adrian Beltre? Is that a...
How about him?
I mean, he's 39 years old. He's still playing. He's slashing well for the Rangers right now. His BABIP is insane. The Indians were recently rumored to... It was barely a rumor. It was just like John Morosi saying, hey, this would fit.
I saw it on Reddit, so I don't know. I was like, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfectly fine idea. It would just... Of course, it's the idea of getting a third baseman and moving Jose Ramirez to second. Adrian Beltre is owed $18 million this year. Is this a thing you want to see happen, or is there another move, or just, I mean, is Jason Kipnis's latest surge enough for you to not want to replace him, or what's going on there, you think?
Well, you know, it's a relatively marginal improvement, by which I mean it's not going to, well, it's a kind of a similar improvement to adding Edwin Encarnacion over Mike Napoli, right? Like, it's not going to blow the doors off. It's not signing, or it's not trading for Manny Machado or anything like that. It's adding a consistent, you know, a legitimately above league average bat to a position that currently is one of the three best hitters in baseball, moving that best three hitters in baseball to a place where it's one of the worst hitters in baseball, and then everything gets better. So in the cold calculation of things, it makes a lot of sense. It's cheap. I love Adrian Beltre. You know, that's a cold calculation right there.
It is.
Yeah. It'd be fun to see him get a ring. And, it makes sense. It's just, I don't know. I mean, and as for, you know, Jason Kipnis' hot streak, how excited can you be about a hot streak when the whole season's been cold, you know? I mean, I've probably written two articles already this year just about how the peripherals are more there for, like, a breakout from. Like, he's bound to start hitting well eventually. But at the same time, it's just like he's not doing that at all. So yeah. I don't know. I like the idea theoretically. It's just, you know, the heart in you is like Jason Kipnis has to be on the Indians. It's where he is.
Yeah,
you know, like, where else does he go?
I think me and Jason have talked about this before. Is the fact that Jason Kipnis is like, to me, he's the most Indians like play. I can imagine any team having a Francisco Lindor, or a Corey Kluber, But Jason Kipnis is like the, like you said, he's the on the Indians. He's not supposed to be anywhere else.
See, I think that's funny because he seems, and I've said this before, he seems very Chicago-y to me because he's from Chicago, of course, but also the facial
hair. Weird how
that
works, right?
Right? But he just, I don't know, he just gives me that vibe. But I mean, you know, I mean, that's maybe it's just a Midwestern guy thing. The most Indians-y Indian, it's probably him. It used to be Carlos Santana, but he's gone now. Now he's just some rando Philly.
And it's still weird seeing him in a Phillies jersey.
It's super strange, man.
I watched so many other games just for him, and it's really weird.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful uniform. I think that's one of the most underrated uniforms. Honestly, their whites, their pinstripes, their light blue ones, all dope uniforms. He looks great. Cool logo, but it's strange. I lost my train. Oh, yeah, Jason Kipnis. I don't know. What do you do with him? Because if you're – like, do you DFA him? Because you need that bench spot for something.
I mean, you could at least get a reliever, right? I mean, even if you had to trade like in a hurry, you could get something for him. But then just DFA and have a reliever, I guess. But
Isn't
it'd be a really weird situation?
Isn't this the last year of his contract?
No, he's got a couple more.
Okay, no. He's I'm sorry, I conflate him and Brantley because they've been together for so long.
Yeah,
So he's gonna be he's around for a little while. So I mean, that's definitely people love control if nothing else.
And my only hold up with Beltre is like you said, the fact that it's not a massive upgrade. At this point, if the Indians are gonna do anything, I'd want them to get that big leap. That's one reason why it's so hard for them to improve. Right. They have like so many either pretty good or great players. Like, I guess center field has proven to not be that once the season got going, but like every other position, even like second base, to upgrade Kipnis, you've got to do pretty big to upgrade what he can be. And then if you get Adrian Beltre, maybe he won't even be an upgrade, but want Manny Machado. That's what I'm looking
for. We all know what we really want here. I mean, my one knock is just that the Indians, and I think I said this last week too, they don't have a lot of great hitters. They have three great hitters, and then I think at this point, actually, they're up to three other above-average offense guys. Edwin has been a little bit hot lately. Yan Gomes is, doing things, and Yonder Alonso. The frustrating part, of course, is two of those three positions is where the offense should be coming from. I think they need more than that. Lonnie Chisenhall, obviously, being back is very helpful. I was doing a little research on him. He is, over the last 2 or 3 years, he's the Indians' third best hitter.
Oh, yeah, and he's always been so good, and everybody just hates him because he's part of a platoon or whatever.
And that's the thing. Like, you look at the platoon numbers, too. He doesn't really have that bad, especially the last 2 years. He doesn't even have that bad of splits. I am firm in believing it. It's all because he started using that axe-handled bat. I think that thing's had a huge effect on him. I was going to write an article about it, but I couldn't figure it out, too. So I'll just talk about it here instead.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out who uses, though, right? There's no real – I know Jose uses it, and then
– Does he?
Yeah, that's been his biggest thing, I think, is the fact that he uses it.
I know Dustin Pedroia started using it a couple years ago, and he had a big breakout. Mookie Betts uses one now. But, yeah, it's a thing. I mean, the logic behind the whole handle makes sense. And
yeah, so do you know the baseball specifics behind what that is? I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I've played baseball a lot in the past, but is it just the fact that it makes it easier to maintain momentum because the way it holds your hand in there? Or
I think the idea of when someone throws like an off-speed pitch or something, it breaks your wrist, and so like one hand rolls over the other one. It kind of helps you maintain a better swing path, especially with a little more arc to it. I mean, if you ever swung an axe, it feels, I guess, better to do it with a bit more of an arc to it.
Of course I've swung an axe, Merritt. Jeez, what do you
know? You know.
Who hasn't?
Also, I read a Babe Ruth biography, and also I've read about Cal Ripken Jr. Both of them trained one way in chopping down trees. So, but no, yeah, you deliver the most power by keeping your hands together and all your knuckles aligned. And with the round handle, it's easier, I guess, to let them kind of slip a little bit. So like someone throws a pitch you're not expecting, you drop a little dribbler instead of hitting a line drive.
You know, this is completely non sequitur here, but like telling a little leaguer to line his knuckles up, I found out, or not even little league, T-baller, is way more difficult than it sounds.
Dude, there's so many knuckles.
Right? Because they see it as like the top knuckle, so they end up like hugging the bat and then like awkwardly leaning over. It's like, not those knuckles, the top part.
See, get that kid flat. An axe bat, they'll know what they're doing.
Well, the kid who did it the most was one who was an Indians fan, so he was my favorite, so I really tried to help him, but
okay,
he was worth helping, so.
Get him an axe bat.
A wooden giant axe bat. He was like the littlest kid on the team. Here, swing this.
I'm going to start manufacturing a line of wiffle ball axe bats. It's going to be my new thing. I'm going to get sued by two different companies.
But Adrian Beltre, I don't think either of us.
Well, that's my dream.
I guess I can't speak for you, but I'm not too. I think it'd be cool. He's a clubhouse guy. He wouldn't cost a ton. Although I think the Rangers would have to eat some of that money, maybe. But I don't know. I love as much as I love Adrian Beltre, I don't think it's a big enough improvement really to make it a huge improvement.
I think he's the type of improvement that can help only because he lengthens the lineup out a little bit. Right now, if he came to the team, he'd be their fourth or fifth. He'd be their fourth best hitter, I guess.
No, Edwin's still better.
I think. Well, I mean, just in terms of stats, right now this year, I mean, he's.
Oh, okay.
It's 100 or less plate appearances nearly, but his OPS plus is higher, his OPS is higher. The power numbers aren't the same because again, less games. But I don't know. It's a move that makes sense, even though you're just like, I get it. Even though it doesn't really, you know, fire you up too much.
Yeah. And all of this, of course, is somewhat possible because Jose Ramirez is just amazing and can play anywhere, and right. It doesn't even matter. But did you know that I found that, I can't remember where I read this. I would like to credit it, but Jose Ramirez, he has 23 home runs. He's on pace to have, I think it's like, I know it's over Adrian Beltre's, like the youngest third baseman to have so many, when he hit like 48 when he was 25. Jose's on pace to beat that, obviously, because he has 23 already. So holy cow, that is a power hitter, and he draws a ton of walks.
Dude, he's been so incredible. He's utterly astounding. I'm reading about him right now. He the things he's doing put him up with some of the best, not even the best like power hitters, but some of the smartest hitters in the game. Like he's in so many different plate discipline ways. He's similar to Joey Votto at this point. And then, yeah, as you said, he's just walking an absurd amount. He already has 50 this year in only 75 games. I mean,
his last highest was 55 last year, and
he's doubled his walk rate. Like, how do you do that? I don't know. I just, incremental change is what we all expect out of baseball. You know, like even Mike Trout only improves a little bit on one thing every year. Now, he's great at everything already, so when he improves on it, you're just like, oh, this is absurd that he can even do this now. But he's, I don't know. What Jose is doing is utterly, he's gone from little Michael Brantley to one of the best hitters in the game, like in the conversation with non-Trout players, and that's crazy.
No, he's crazy. In the conversation with Trout players, isn't he? He's pretty close. Well,
no,
listen. Look, Trout on a slow week is Jose Ramirez. I'm very confident in saying that.
Yes, no, you're right. Trout on a, yes, I agree with you. And that's the amazing thing about A, what Ramirez is doing, and B, how great Trout is what Ramirez is doing now is a normal Mike Trout year, which is, I think, complimentary to both of them. So yeah, there you go.
And I think at least a little part is, maybe I'm just trying to, maybe I'm acting main, or what is it, national writer here, trying to make up, what the hell is that called? When you try to add a story to something that isn't really
narrative
driven. Yeah. But it seems like the Bryce Harper thing with, he got all the walks, that kind of like ruined him. I wonder if teams are trying to do the same thing to Jose. And it's just not working at all.
he just shakes his head.
Right, yeah. Because I kind of looked at it today, and he's like, in post-game interviews, he doesn't seem phased at all. He just says that he'll find his home run pitches, basically. And the whole team doesn't seem to care. Edwin doesn't mind that teams are walking to get to him. He's like, I'll just kill the ball. It's fine.
It's so cool.
This whole team is just so, like, it's another kind of cliche thing, but like mentally strong. Like, nothing bothers them, it doesn't seem like.
All he cares about is his chaw and strutting around the dugout. He has the 11th highest walk rate in baseball.
Yeah. And he's got already 7 intentional walks.
Man, some weird names on this walk rate chart. Justin Bour is 3rd in baseball. Jesus. He's hit more home runs. But no, yeah.
He's ridiculous. That's what we want to get.
Kyle Schwarber walks an awful lot. Damn.
Who?
Kyle Schwarber. Perhaps you've heard of him.
Nope, never heard of him. I blacked out for a year. I wasn't alive. I don't know what you're talking about.
What? How many walks do you think you'll end the season with? 125?
Oh, yeah, pretty close. Is that
what's the most walks in the Indians in the last decade, in a season in the last decade for the Indians?
I'm going to take a shot in the dark and guess it's a Carlos Santana season.
Let's see. Let's find. I'm going to use the money I spent on this stupid thing.
What did you spend money on that was stupid?
Oh, and I have a what do you call it with a baseball reference? You know, I gave them money.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I can search the world of baseball for all the.
Carlos Santana had upwards Indians. Of 125, right?
Upwards of, I'm just gonna do upwards of 100, so I can just see some fun numbers.
He had 108. 113 is Carlos Santana's highest in 2014.
113. That's a lot of walks, dude.
I mean. I don't think it's impossible that Jose is going to pass that, even if it's not by a ton, but he's at 50 before the All-Star break and without.
Oh, damn it. I'm on a different computer. That's right. I can't use this computer.
Well, we can at least safely say he's on pace to make 100 because he's at 50 already. So throw in a few more in there and we'll see how he does. I don't know if he's going to play the whole season or if he's going to keep walking like this, but I'm going to be interested to see what you find. Cause I wrote about it. It was just the fact that he's drawing walks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're going to go into it more and see why he's drawing more walks, but if you do, I'd be interested to see that. If it's if he's being more selective or he's just not getting as many pitches out of the zone.
Oh, I'll give you a hint. Yes, he is being more selective.
Oh, that is, that's just scary. I mean, it's a different thing if pitchers are pitching to him differently, but the fact that it's just him deciding he's going to walk more is terrifying.
That's what I mean. He's just not swinging. Let's see. Carlos Santana's highest walk rate in a season is actually twice. He's 17.1%.
That's obnoxious.
That's a lot of walking. He's doing this year. He did it back in 2014. Was that the year he had all those, had 113 walks or whatever it was?
Yeah.
It was. Jesus Christ. I miss him.
I miss
him. He was good. Is he doing good?
He started really slow. He's doing fine now. The
classic Carlos. Right. Oh, man.
We want to talk ex-Indians not doing so great. Brian Shaw. Oh, good God. Lord, that poor man.
I don't want to talk about that, actually. It makes me feel a little bad. I feel bad for him. I feel bad for Rockies fans. I don't feel bad for their management because those idiots spent a lot of money on a reliever. Idiots. Like, you just don't do that. Come on.
On a reliever who pitched so many innings recently. As much as I believed in Brian Shaw and I loved him, and I mean, it's clear his arm was just Tito ran him through the dirt. The simulation that Matt Schlichting did with, like, having him pitch every day was not that far off.
Was basically real life is what that was, yeah. Yeah, well, I remember I wrote something middle of last year, I think, was when he was really struggling. And, like, if you looked at his slider movement numbers, he just wasn't getting any depth at all on his slider. And it was just this little flat, little spinner frisbee thing that was just getting utterly obliterated.
Which is, like, all he's doing this year.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, when you throw a flat slider that doesn't break as much because it's Coors Field, and then you walk, how many people? Oh, Lord.
Is it a couple? Man. It might be a couple.
I mean, his walk rate is 11.6%. It's higher even than it was in 2016 when everything was terrible.
That's almost Jose Ramirez's walk rate.
I know. Man, him and Jose Ramirez have so much in common. They're
both
unflappable and tons of walks. Yeah, you know.
So here's another name to throw at you here, Merritt.
Tell me this name.
Jesus Aguilar. That's a guy. He's never going to make it. He's a quad A bat. And he's going to just DFA him last February. It's fine. He'll be claimed by the Brewers. And now he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. That's clear at this point.
You know.
He's slashing .299, .358, .597 with 16 home runs for the Brewers. That's a .150 WRC+. He's easily the third best hitter on the Indians, I think. What a ridiculous scenario that happened. His BABIP isn't even crazy right now, so it's not like he's going to regress to the ground. Did the Indians screw this up, or was there just really no way they were going to avoid losing him? And maybe it's not their fault. He didn't do great in the majors. He didn't get a ton of chances, but he definitely didn't show himself when they had Carlos Santana in front of him and a couple other good platoon bats at DH.
I mean, this is something you hear a lot of, commentators say just during games and stuff. You guys just don't have a chance to show what they're made of because, you know, there is a Carlos Santana in front of you. Or the Mike Napoli thing was maybe a little bit more troublesome.
They signed him or signed Mike Napoli instead of just...
Right, yeah. Right. So they said they just put him in front so he just didn't even have a chance. I think we're discounting a little bit the mighty power of the Wisconsin brat and the beer there in and around Milwaukee to give him this mighty power to allow him to hit all these home runs. But that's just me pointing out facts. It is totally a bummer that they kind of missed out on this one. But I it's hard to get too broken up about it because every team misses out on guys. You know, I mean, you look at, well, Trevor Bauer, right? They got him for half a season of Shinsu Chu, basically.
Yep.
Essentially. So, I mean, this is just, you know, or Corey. Who feels worse? The Padres for Corey Kluber or the Indians for Jesus Aguilar?
Not close, but what about the Angels and Mike Clevenger? That's a pretty similar one.
I think that right there, that is a close. At least the Angels got something for it. Yeah, it was like half a season of Vinny Pastano.
Yeah.
And these are the things that happen in baseball all the time. It totally sucks. It's nice to see him succeeding. I can't be the only one who always kind of hoped for something out of him. I hope it doesn't happen again with like Bobby Bradley or something like that. You know, you watch these prospects come up and you hope for them and then they don't do well. And then, I don't know. I blame Matt LaPorta for poisoning the water when it comes to first base prospects in the Indian system because.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that before I said I was going to say. I was like, wasn't Bobby Bradley a big prospect? I don't think Jesus Aguilar was, but It clearly doesn't matter because Matt LaPorta was kind of a big prospect.
He was the biggest prospect. Yeah. Like he's the guy you got for your ring. You know, he was
you know, he runs a pizza chain now.
Ooh, does he?
He does, yeah.
All right, good for him. That's pretty awesome. Good for him.
I remember I looked it up a couple years ago as like, what's Matt LaPorta up to post now?
Like, is it like his own pizza chain, or is he a franchise, or he doesn't own a bunch of Papa John's, does he? Because that's embarrassing. I'll look it up. Don't worry. I'll take it as upon myself.
I think it's Pie 5 Pizza. He has 18 franchise years. This was in 2014. So
holy
maybe it's not
crap.
Date, but
that man's rich. That oof.
That's good that bonus him. Money. I know, right?
That good-ass pizza money, man. Mm-mm.
Matt LaPorta was good. Never like a dick, or he never...
No, he always seemed
a good guy.
He always seemed like a big dumb idiot who just couldn't lay off sliders. That's all.
That's the most endearing way of saying that, too. I hope you mean.
I just, I always liked him. I always hoped for the best. His swing always bugged the hell out of me because it was always very flat. I was always, that's not a big arcing swing that I want out of my first baseman. Like, that's not a Jim Tomey swing. What's going on here, Matt?
And then I think when he failed, it was Casey Kochman was next, right? How about that for a swing for you, Merritt? But so so the Jesus Aguilar situation, I think it draws some kind of unfortunate parallels to Yandy Diaz because they were both crushing in AAA. Yandy Diaz is still crushing in AAA. Mm-hmm. And I looked in the players that Jesus Aguilar was blocked by 2 years. I mean, it was Nick Swisher, but it was paid all that money. We have to use him kind of thing.
Yeah.
He was awful in both seasons. But then in 2015, I mean, it was Ryan Rayburn and David Murphy, which doesn't sound great now. But that was a pretty damn good platoon there for a while. Remember Ryan Rayburn when he murdered lefties?
Yeah, he was half of an all-star. It was amazing.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know if it's completely this. I just feel like Yandy Diaz should be replacing Jason Kipnis at this point. But maybe that's another Nick Swisher thing where he already has the money. He's our guy who's been here forever. Maybe he won't, but I just don't want to see it happen again.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, and I don't think... Aguilar was never quite the physical specimen that Yandy Diaz is. Like the numbers, just in terms of like raw crushing the ballness that Yandy Diaz does, is crazy to me. You know, it's top percentile like across baseball. It's Aaron Judge kind of level stuff. You know, Giancarlo Stanton kind of stuff. So it's just the ground ball thing is a problem, which was a problem too. Though if you look at his Aguilar's numbers, he just didn't hit a lot of fly balls when he was in the minors and things like that. 45%, 54% fly ball rate 1 year, but
yeah, he didn't hit absurd home run numbers, did he, in AAA?
He just hit a lot. I mean, his ground ball rates were anywhere between 40 when AA, 45%, 46, 38%, but then he just never really got into that whole hitting the ball for extra bases kind of a thing, which he's doing now. His line drive rate is creeping up towards his ground ball rate. His fly ball rate is sky high. So his home run, he's in a ton of home runs. This is what Yandy Diaz should be doing. He just doesn't instead. And I mean, a part of me wonders, I mean, obviously the front office of the Indians sees this too, and they see what they have in Yandy Diaz. And we haven't heard anything about Yandy Diaz. And you wonder if they're also trying to do this with him, turn him into point out to him, hey, you know, you could make $100 million if you could hit a fly ball. Do you realize that? Like, I don't know.
I've always felt like he's going to be a test case for how easy is it just to switch up your swing. Like, is it really that you just swing higher? That's it. Or is it really hard to, maybe when like you're Jose Ramirez and you're already pretty damn good at baseball. Mm-hmm. But if you're Yandy Diaz and all you can do is hit really hard, maybe it's just not that easy to just swing up. I don't know.
No, I mean,
I think it's going to be interesting to see.
You're probably right. And that's his contact rates have always been pretty sky high. Diaz, I mean, weren't they? I mean, he always had good contact rates.
Yeah, see, that's what I think. It's just like the one variable we get to see if it's going to be that easy for Yandy Diaz. Because what else can you tell him besides hit up?
And I mean, and part of that too is just commitment. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, some guys are better than others. You know, I'm actually writing about Tim Anderson of the White Sox right now.
I love
Tim Anderson. The other website I write for. He's hitting way more fly balls this year. He already has 13 home runs. Like, he's turning into a very good hitter. And this is a dude who didn't even play baseball until he got to college. Like, he's just, it's all just hand-eye and things like that and being able to adapt. So it's part, is it that variable? And also, is he willing to make the change? Because, and I've said this before, if you're hitting as well as he's hit in the minors, you can look at those numbers and say, I don't know, coach. I'm beating the hell out of the ball. Yeah, he's only slugging 377, but, you know. So, I don't know. It would be nice to see if he – because it's just his walk numbers are always so high. His plate discipline is so good. But those damn ground balls. Good Lord.
Yeah. And I think somebody pointed out that with Jesus Aguilar, I mean, he was, like, declining in the minors, so it might have made sense for the Indians. But
right
now, Yandy Diaz isn't. He just draws a bunch of walks. So.
Right. So, and another thing, Aguilar, too, you know, like, there's that arc you see in prospects where, like, they get their chance, and then they're a flash in the pan, and they kind of go back, and they come back. And every time they come back, it seems like they're a little bit worse. And then their career's over all of a sudden. So, I mean, it in every sense, it looked like that with Jesus Aguilar. And then all of a sudden, here we go. So, again, it's hard to be mad. Good for him.
Yep. All right, Merritt. What do you say we answer some questions now from our good listeners?
Yeah. This is the best part.
On the Facebook and the Twitter. They're always so normal and definitely not asking about which one looks better, which is weird. I don't know. Anyway, hey, I always ask you guys.
These are hard-hitting, important questions that I have opinions on. So, whatever, all right?
It is really one of my favorite parts, like the weird stuff people come up with. I love it. We'll always ask you guys for on Twitter and Facebook. Don't email me unless you use my personal one. That's fine. But I don't know why I keep bringing it up. But don't email sbn@letsgotribe.com. I never check it. So the first one, at S. Brady Artists, he wants to know who passes whom. Jose Ramirez finishes with higher WAR than 1953 Al Rosen, which was 9.1 Fangraphs WAR.
All right.
Or Lindor finishes higher than 1948 Lou. I cannot say these names. Lou Boudreau, 10.9 Fangraphs WAR. Neither, both. Ultimately, it won't matter because Trout beats 1923 Babe Ruth. That's a mouthful, but I mean, we can start from one after the other here.
Well, nothing matters because Trout's is gonna tear a hole in space time and. We'll literally go back and defeat Babe Ruth in single-handed combat.
He's going to fade away like in Back to the Future.
Right.
This Fangraphs page will slowly be deleted from the bottom up. But yeah, do you think any of this is going to happen? Jose Ramirez better than Al Rosen? That doesn't seem impossible.
Al Rosen is the name of an old man who gives me Werther's candies.
Al Rosen is the last third base on Indians third baseman to go back to back All Star games. Thank you very much. And he also has banging hard candies.
Hey, Sonny, come over, Werther's. No, Grandpa, I only like the soft caramels. Oh, they get stuck in my teeth.
Did you know I went to back to back All Star games? Sure, Grandpa. Wrong, Al Rosen.
Whatever, Grandpa. Al Rosen had a hell of a 1953. I mean, let's be honest here. But I'll say this, too. What will help Jose Ramirez and probably ruin this question is if he ends up getting moved to second base, that's going to give him a decided boost in the defensive side of things when it comes to wins above replacement because second base is rated higher. You get a better positional adjustment. So there's that cheating method of him surpassing Al Rosen's 9.1. But I think that is more likely to happen than Lindor's, 10.9?
Yeah, that's a really high bar to climb there.
That's a really high number. And, I mean, how good was Lou Boudreau that year? Probably pretty good. Lou Boo.
I mean, to be worth double-digit war, I think he was okay that year, yeah.
I never look at old players' stats on Fangraphs. I always use Baseball Reference.
Oh, really? I always use Fangraphs for everything, so that's my default.
I mean, I like Baseball Reference's whole setup more. I think it's funner to click around, and I don't get that thing popping up asking me to give them money because I've already given money to Baseball Reference. I think Ramirez has a better shot. He's having the better year. He's the better player right now. He's not as cool. I mean, what you think is cool, I guess. You know, if you like the cool, calm, collected type, then he's your man. But if you like the in-your-face flashy boy, then Lindor obviously is your man. It's a nice pairing, though. You know, it's a very Owen Wilson, Jackie Chan type from the hit movie Shanghai Nights or Shanghai Noon. Okay, Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan in the hit movie Rush Hour or Rush Hour 2.
The next one. The next question. Joe Owler on Facebook. He wants to know, will the front office trade for a center fielder? Who could they target if so? I don't know if you looked into this one more, but I don't know. I mean, like Domingo Santana, he's freaking awful now. Maybe they can get him pretty cheap.
Yes, that's what they need, Matt. Terrible players.
Can they just add a terrible? I don't know if there's really any center fielders they'd want, which is the hard thing. Obviously, it's the easiest position the most obvious one they need to fix, unless they know Bradley Zimmer's going to come back and be healthy and good, but I don't really know who's out there. Is Mookie Betts available? Can they just go get that guy?
He's right fielder. You don't want him to play center. He couldn't do it.
I'll put him in center. Watch me.
Leonis Martin is an option in a way. Him, maybe. I don't know. I'm just looking down a list of center fielders that are theoretically. Cody Bellinger. What the hell? What are you doing in center field? No, I don't think that there makes any sense.
Yeah.
That wasn't good English. There's any sense to be made with trading for a center fielder because there's no good ones available that are going to make any real demonstrative impact. Charlie Blackman's having a terrible year.
What is going on in Colorado?
I don't know. Everything's falling apart. It's a team you just don't ever look at because they play in a weird psycho land. Them, the Padres. What are some other teams you don't think about? Mariners you think about because you feel bad for them. Anyway. I guess the question is, what are you looking for in a center fielder? Is it someone who can hit at a league average level and play good defense? Then maybe, I don't know, Malik Smith, but they wouldn't trade him because he's under control for a while. And like he's barely even league average, 98 WRC plus. Delino DeShields, maybe?
He can't hit really.
But he's a great defender. I mean, I think he's one of the two or three best defenders in baseball right now, according to one of those bunk StatCast stats.
If things go real south real quick for the Mariners, I don't know, D. Gordon? Is he even remotely available, you think? Or
isn't he playing second again?
I guess he can play.
I guess.
But it'd have to be really bad for the Mariners. But they're in a division with the Astros and Angels, so.
Right. So, I mean, and they're playing way above their heads.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, you know, Starling Marte maybe? I don't know. Would they trade him, though? Probably not. Maybe. The Pirates, but again, he's under team control for a while. So no, it just doesn't make any real sense to do that because at that point, maybe Billy Hamilton, I don't know, he's not going to get Billy Hamilton, Kevin Pillar, I'm just looking at names now.
I think you could get Billy Hamilton if you wanted him. I don't know how much longer they're going to wait for that one.
I think it was Mike Petrillo on Twitter saying he's basically starting to play himself out of the league.
Which is unfortunate. He's so fun to watch.
He is, but he's just so bad at such important parts of baseball. Getting on base.
That's not that important.
Like if he could just do that one thing a little. Michael Conforto. They should trade for Michael Conforto. They'll never get him, but still, it would be nice. I like him. Little League World Series superstar. So that's my answer to whoever's question that was. No, I don't think they're going to do anything. I think they're probably happy with what they have, which is a sad thing to say.
Yeah,
which... but. Nothing the goal of center field here is the defense, I think, because they're getting enough offense out of left and right to kind of offset that. And, of course, if any of the actual offense-centric positions would actually step up, you know. The big free agents this year, I think, anyway, they're not really outfielders. They're mostly infielders. And that's, I think, where the Indians need more improvement anyway, just if only because Jason Kipnis has been so bad. So that's all.
Now I'm buying time because this won't buffer. I was going to interrupt you with an alarm sound because that didn't work at all. It's a Tyler Nakin question of the week, Merritt.
Ooh, is that an air raid siren?
It is. It didn't. This part of that where it winds up so it makes sense, but I just start at the middle because it wouldn't buffer. So it just sounds like a monotone. But it's a Tyler Nakin question of the week.
Yes.
Because it happens every single week.
There's your center fielder.
Eric Turner on Facebook, he wants to know, at what point do we begin letting Tyler Naquin bat against lefties? I really dislike the platoon system Tito has in place. Then a bunch of more stuff about Tyler Naquin.
Okay, he can't answer us. What? So let's posit as to why he hates the platoon system. Thoughts? What do you think?
Wait, what?
Why do you think Eric? Who asked this question?
Eric Turner.
Why do you think Eric hates – is it because he keeps score of every game and he hates having to add names in every time?
I think it's the cult of Tyler Naquin. It enslaves people and he has mind control, something about his eyes.
He does. He's not having – again,
391. He's not even good this year.
Yeah, you're right. He's really not that good this year. Jeez.
He has a 2.9 walk rate and a 26 strikeout rate and a 94 WRC plus.
94, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, he's hitting like 295 with a 7,000 BABIP.
That very brief period in time where it looked like he was going to be good with a high BABIP is gone now. He is regressing.
I mean, all right, so he's hitting 182 against lefties in 11 at-bats. But batting average doesn't tell the whole story, right, Matt? So let's go down to these more advanced numbers.
No, we're good. 299 okay, batting
so
average.
So he has a negative 10 WRC plus against
all right,
a lefty.
Nerd. Right, we don't need that. How many ribbies?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I'll tell you. He has two ribbies in 7 games, 11 plate appearances against a left-handed pitching.
That's good.
So there you go. 3 strikeouts. Never is probably the option, the good choice. The platoon system exists simply because these guys aren't good at everything. We can't all be Jose Ramirez, sadly.
I will admit that even I'm a little surprised that Naquin has dipped this far that fast.
I know. I mean, he was really bad last year, but I kind of thought there was a lot of both noise, but also just not just
I mean,
sample
only size.
19
games, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just, again, he just I knew he wasn't that bad, just I knew he wasn't that good.
But even like this year from a couple weeks ago, yeah.
But like he's not hitting for any power this year, and that's what was so electrifying about him in 2016. I mean, even if you take away one of those home runs because it was a total mistake by Melvin Upton. That's still 13 home runs with a bunch of other extra base hits. He was exciting that year, and he walked a lot, and he took a lot of pitches. So I don't know what changed. People learned that he can't lay off a high fastball, I suppose.
I don't feel like they're even attacking him. I think I looked at it not that long ago. He's not even getting like a ton of fastballs up in the zone. He's just not hitting. I always thought it was weird that nobody's really doing that. I don't know why, but he just still doesn't get that many pitches up in the zone like he should. He's just still not hitting anything.
He's swinging. Oh, he swings more than half the time. He swings out of the zone 39% of the time.
It's called being aggressive, Merritt. That's how you play baseball.
Just, you know, he's just trying to win games here. Put the ball in play. Just trying to put the ball in play and make something happen.
Try is the operative
play?
Word.
Sure, it's a double play. So what? You're a double play.
I'm going to get so many angry emails out of this, Merritt. Can we just take a minute and say we love Tyler Naquin? And
hey.
I love Tyler Naquin.
You can go back into my post history and see how many times I've written positive things about him. I've probably written a novella about Tyler Naquin positively. So get off my back, listeners.
I like the idea of Tyler Naquin. Is that fair?
Yeah. I like him, yeah, as an ideal, you know, as something to strive towards. See, the idea of the Naquin.
There you go.
But it's just not on the baseball field, that's all.
All right, Merritt. That's going to be our show this week.
Real winner.
Was. Like, I think the Indians actually started playing now after that fake rain delay, so we've got something to watch while we're not podcasting. Everybody listening live now, thank you. We've had quite a few people stay. Please don't email me about Tyler Naquin. I love him. He's my favorite player.
Email Matt.
Merritt, we'll talk to you next week.
I'll be here.